Now, we're holding on page Samach Hey in Nedarim, about three lines from the bottom, middle of Os Lamed Aleph. We started learning last time that Mishnah is talking about a case, a person makes a neder from various kinds of foods. In particular, he makes a neder not to eat tavshil, then what exactly is included. So we established that the definition of tavshil in our Mishnah means anything that's normally eaten with bread. Now, so the Mishnah had said that then he would be also to eat a liquidy kind of maisik dera, which includes things like firefall and couscous and things like that, because a liquidy one would be eaten with bread, because if nothing else, you can dip your bread in the sauce. Or mutaba'aba b'chola, but he'd be allowed to eat a thick porridge like that, because that's not normally eaten with bread. Well, the Gemara points out, masnissin d'loik b'abloi. That means that our Mishnah is not going like the style, like the habit of the people of Bavel. To Amr Abzera, because we find that Abzera says, Bavloi Tipshoi, the foolish Babylonians, to Achli Lachma Balachma, where they eat bread with bread, meaning they would eat bread together. Bread was always the mainstay of the meal. That's why we have a special bracha on it. That's why it's motzi all of most other foods, etc. They would eat bread with bread, meaning what they would do is together with their bread, they would eat porridge like that, which is also maisik dera, things like that, that are made out of wheat or barley or things like that. So basically, Rabbi Zera is saying the whole point of having two different foods is that one complements the other, not that it duplicates the other. So what's the point of having bread and porridge, which basically are the same thing, they're both made out of wheat? One point is, so that Reb Zera himself was originally from Babel, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, so he appreciates much more the way they do things in Eretz Yisrael, so he's calling the people of his former country that they're tipshoi for that. The Shittim of Kovetzis actually points out there can be an interesting nakamina in it in Halacha. Would you, if you make the brot, if you say hamotzi, are you in fact going to be able to be motzi the daisa, the porridge or whatever that you eat as part of the meal? In Babel, yes, because we're saying that that was a normal part of the meal. In Eretz Yisrael, we're saying it's not. So it would be called Dvorim HaBoyim V'Sei Chasuda Shaloi Machmas Hasuda. You're eating it in the middle of the meal, but it's not an actual part of the meal, and therefore you would actually have to say a separate bracha on it. This comes up, for example, you have during a meal, you have, for example, things like compote or other things like that. You sometimes have issues, you have to make a separate bracha. It's not normally a compote, at least is, but at least you have other kinds of things like that that are sometimes eaten in the middle of a meal, but not, they're not really a normal part of the meal per se.
So twice hamotzi?
So then, no, not twice hamotzi, but you would say a separate bracha on it, whatever bracha the thing gets. So there is a vort on it from the Chassam Sofer. This point about also the Bavloi Tipshoi Da'achle Nama Benama, the Gemara brings it in Beitza as well in connection with Erev Tavshilin. There's a vort there from the Chassam Sofer that a deeper meaning of what Reb Zera means is sometimes you have people who eat in order to do something greater, and then you have people who eat for the sake of being able to eat later, as we have the famous story involving the Rebbe Rashab and his brother, where they're arguing about the Raza, where they're arguing about what's the difference between a Yid and a Goy, and the Rebbe Rashab calls it, the Rebbe Marash, I mean, first calls in the Jewish Mesharis over there, Ben Sion, and then the Goyish coachman, Ivan, and the difference is the Yid is eating in order to be able to live, and he lives in order to be able to say a Kapitel Tillim and whatever, and he gives a Krecht, as opposed to Ivan lives in order to eat, and eats in order to live, and he lives in order to eat, and that's his satisfaction, is that he's very satisfied with that. So therefore, Reb Zera is saying, these people are eating bread, bilachma, for the sake of bread. They're eating bread just in order to be able, for the sake of, to be able to eat bread later. That's a very foolish way of doing things. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying that in Babel, it was a perfectly normal thing to eat a thick porridge and ovah together with bread, and therefore over there, the definition of tavshil will be different than it was in the Mishnah. Well, in this connection, Omer of Chista, Demashil Lahoin, is there anybody who can ask Lahole Nakdoni de Hutzel, who can ask the Nakdonim of Hutzel? Hutzel is a city in Babel. Nakdoni would mean that they're daikonim, they're very precise, they're very finicky as far as their taste, as far as what they eat. A number of the Mephoshim here have a girsa instead, Nakroni, with a resh instead of a dalet. So Nakdoni would mean the ones, like in English, for example, you have the word punctilious, which comes from a word that means it's related to the word point in English. So it means like they're careful about every single point. So Nakdoni would be the same kind of thing, Meloshin Nakurda. A different girsa there is Nakroni, which the Ran and a number of other Mephoshim over here explain, comes from a Loshon that means clean. So the very clean people of Hutzel, who again are very, very picky about how they eat at their tables. And the Mephoshim over here brings another possibility that Nakroni can also be Meloshin Koran Erponov, the people who their faces glow. Anyway, so can anybody ask them, Hodin Daisa, this Daisa that we're talking about over here, which is basically the Maisik data that we mentioned in the Mishnah, a type of porridge made from flour or from grain. Heichin Mailu Lemechla. What's the best way of eating it? Fine, they're going to eat it together with bread, but how do they do it? Dechiti v'lachma dechiti. Do they eat a Daisa made out of wheat, flour or cracked wheat or whatever, together with wheat bread, or decidi balachma decidi, and they eat the one made from barley together with barley bread. In other words, so then there's really no difference at all, except that one of them is cooked and the other one is baked. Maybe at least they do enough of it. Maybe at least they want a little more variation than that, and therefore they'll have wheat daisa together with barley bread and barley daisa together with wheat bread. So basically the question is, in other words, Marsha explains, at least are they saying that they have to be different as far as what grain they are and as far as how they're prepared, baking versus cooking, or do they not care about that? That they don't care even if it comes from the same kind of grain, as long as there's a difference in how they're prepared, they consider that enough of a difference. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Rova achle b'chassisi. Rova, when he ate bread, he would eat it together with chassisi. So the bread would be made out of wheat or barley, as the case may be. Chassisi, chassisi the Ran brings means, or the Mefarish brings rather, that it means that this is flour made from toasted barley kernels. So they would take barley kernels while they're fresh, they would toast them in an oven, and then they would grind them up and make flour out of them. So that way, so it has a different taste. It is barley, but it's also because it goes through that process, it comes out sweeter. The Gemara elsewhere calls this stuff kimcha davi shuna. So therefore,
was done the same, right?
What?
The Omer.
The Omer was basically a similar kind of thing. Yeah, it was actually made somewhat similar. It was to take the barley grains and toast them and then grind them up. Yeah, it is actually fairly similar in that regard. So here, Rava would have his bread together with that. So again, there's definitely a variation in taste over there because this achassisi tastes sweet. Tosfos, on the other hand, explains that chassisi is not that, because then the Gemara should call it by its usual name, kimcha davi shuna. Instead, Tosfos explains that chassisi is a porridge made from lentil flour. So in that case, that has a much different taste than bread. So therefore, Rava had no problem eating them together. Okay. More on this topic of eating daisa, of eating these porridges and things like that. So the Gemara says, Rava bar Rav Huna ashkechei l'Rav Huna t'ka'ochel daisa be'etzba osei. One time, Rava bar Rav Huna saw Rav Huna, his father, was eating daisa with his fingers. In those times, as we're going to see in the continuation of the story, it was very common that people would just take food with their fingers rather than using forks or spoons or things like that. Amalei, so he asked him, Amai ka'ochel ma b'yodei? Rebbe, why are you eating it with your hands? Why don't you use some kind of keli? Omalei, so Rav Huna tells him, Hochi Omar Rav, because you should know that Rav said, Daisa ve'etzba'osa bosim. When you eat this daisa with your hand. Now, Marsha points out that Rav about Rav Huna's question was really two things. First of all, why are you not using a spoon or some other utensil? And number two, why are you using your whole hand rather than just taking a pinch of it at a time with a couple of fingers? So he answers him, Omalei, Hochi Omarab, Daisa ve'etzba'osa bosim. When you eat it with your fingers, then it tastes better. But called the cane betarted, all the more so if you take two fingers, or called the cane betlas, and all the more so with three fingers. So that explains both. That's why I'm not eating it with a spoon, because it has more flavorful this way. And number two, that's why I'm doing it with my whole hand, because based on what Rav is saying, it comes out the more fingers you use, the better. One point is, Mephoshim explained, that since the Gemara is going to go on to say that the saliva that a person gets after eating daisa is actually very bad for him, then there's a certain advantage to not eating it with a spoon. Because you eat it with a spoon, inevitably a little bit of saliva from your mouth remains on the spoon between bites. So then you're taking that in, and that's not so good for you. So like this, he's taking with his fingers, where your fingers, you'll wipe off between one time and the next, and therefore you won't get the saliva in your mouth. Now, further on, the Gemara is going to say that when people are eating together, you shouldn't do that, because then you shouldn't take with your fingers, because then you're going to disgust the other person. But here, Rav Huna was eating it himself, so therefore there's no problem him using his fingers. So the Gemara continues. Omale Rav v'chia brei. Rav says to his son Chia, v'chein omale Rav Huna l'Rav brei. And similarly, Rav Huna said to his son Rav, the Rav bar Rav Huna that we just had. You v'zamnim loch lechol daisa l'meichol daisa. If they invite you, if somebody invites you to their house to eat daisa, to eat this porridge with them, ad parsa, then up to a parsa. So there's two explanations what that means. One is that when the Mefarish brings one explanation that it means it won't satisfy you any more than the time it takes to walk a parsa. It will fill you up for the moment, but the time it takes to walk a parsa, which is 4 mil, which is approximately 72 minutes, it won't fill you up beyond that. On the other hand, bistro de turad, floss of parasin, but when it comes to beef, that will keep you satisfied for the time it takes to walk 3 parasa, so you're talking like 4 hours. The other explanation, which the other explanation the Mefarish brings, and so do all the other Mefarishim mean over here, that it means that if they invite you to eat daisa, be willing to travel even a parsa to take up that invitation, because it's good stuff. And if they're inviting you to eat beef, then that's an even better invitation, and then go as much as 3 parsa to accept the invitation. Okay. So now the Gemara continues more on this topic of daisa. Omale Rav l'chia brei, another piece of advice that Rav tells his son Chia, v'chein omale Rav Huna l'Rav brei, and again Rav Huna said the same thing to his son Rabba. Kol mi da'am, anything that you eat, and afterwards you have saliva in your mouth as a result of it, lo tiflet tamei Rabba. Don't spit it out in front of your Rebbe. After all, moira Rabba k'moira shemoyim, your respect for your Rebbe should be like with a respect for Hashem. And the Iyun Yaakov points out, we know you're not allowed to spit in the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara points out, in Brachas, we are allowed to spit in Shul, which is how we do it by Aleinu, but still, in the Beis Hamikdash is a higher level of the Shekhinah, and you don't spit over there. So therefore, don't be spitting in front of your Rebbe. Levar min kora v'daisa, with the exception of if you eat kora, which are some kind of pumpkin or gourd or something like that, v'daisa, or this daisa, this porridge that we're talking about over here. Those kinds of things are to your body like a stick, like a long skinny stick of molten lead, which actually we in Dalad Mrs. Day, when it comes to in Masechta Sanhedrin, the Dalad Mrs. Basin, one of them consists of just that, where they take it's called a psila, which literally means a wick, but it means a long skinny thing of lead, and they melt it and pour it down the guy's throat. So the same way, in other words, Rav and Rav Huna are saying the saliva after eating these things is very, very bad for your body. So therefore, so that you can spit in front of your Rebbe because of the danger involved. In fact, even if you're standing in front of Shabu Malka, the king of Persia, then spit it out in his presence. And he'll understand because he'll realize that it's dangerous to swallow that saliva. More about eating daisa. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi one time were eating together. And here, unlike Rav Huna before, who was eating by himself out of a plate, here they were sharing a plate together and both taking out of it. Chad ochel daisa be'etzba osei, one of them was taking it with his fingers. V'chad ochel behutza. The other one was using a hutza, which means some kind of, so the Ran translates it as a piece of bark. So he's using a piece of bark as a makeshift spoon. Omale de ochobet va'ose, the ochob hutza, the one who was using his fingers says to the other one who's using the hutza, the bark, he says, "An mosa atam achaleni rucha. How long are you going to make me have to eat your saliva?" In other words, every time you take this piece of bark with some dice on it and you put it in your mouth, a little bit of your saliva ends up with it, and then you, like you have in English, you call it double dipping. You ever, by a simcha, you know, you have a thing of dip for the vegetables over there. You don't take a bite into a vegetable and then dip it again into the dip. You're going to spread your germs into it. So the same way, one of them is saying to the other, what are you doing that for? Now, given that, so that's Marsha points out, and Ben Yoyoda points out similar. If it was a spoon, he might not have minded so much, because a spoon is easier to clean between bites. So sure, he could take a spoon, then he could wipe it off, and then use it again. As opposed to the hutza, it's not as strong, it'll fall apart more easily. So therefore, you can't clean it between bites, and therefore, the one of them is complaining to the other that you're putting your saliva into the food. And omelet On the other hand, the one who's using the chutzah says to the other one who's using his fingers, "Ad masa atam achalene tzeoscha." Yeah, but on the other hand, how long are you going to make me eat your filth from under your fingernails? It's not always possible to keep the area under your fingernails completely clean, so inevitably some of it gets into the food also. So therefore, either one has a chisarim compared to the other. Which Ben Yoyada points out, that's why the Gemara didn't actually identify. Why didn't it say, for example, Rabbi Yehuda ate with the chutzah, Rabbi Yossi ate with the spoon, or something like that, and then we don't need this long silky locution, this long expression, de'ochel ba'etzba ase, the de'ochel ba'chutzah. Then you could say much more simply, Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Yossi, the reason is, because since each one is the other one is complaining to the other that you're not doing something right, the Gemara didn't want to say Lashon Hara about them. More on the topic of foods that are good for you or not so good for you, in particular in connection with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Aisul Kamayu Blusfiyin. They one time brought to them Blusfiyin, which is a type of figs that are overripe. A type of figs that grow overripe on the tree. The Aruch actually discusses what exactly it is. The Aruch HaShalem discusses the word blusfiyin, or the different gesoys, what the word is exactly. It's related to some kind of Greek word, and there's a few possibilities. It may mean like the Mefarish says over here, that it means overripe figs. It may also be a type of mulberries, or it may even be some type of vegetable. Whatever it is, Rabbi Yehuda ochal, Rabbi Shimon lo ochal. Rabbi Yehuda ate some of it, Rabbi Shimon did not. Omalei Rabbi Yehuda, my time alei ochel mar. So he asks, why aren't you eating it? Omalei Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon tells him, Elu en yotzim ibnei ma'ayin kol ikur. Because these whatever these blusfian are, they never leave the stomach. In other words, they're not digestible. So therefore, and it's not healthy to eat them. Omalei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says to him, Kol shekin shenismach alei lamachar. Well, then all the better. If they stay in the stomach, we'll be able to rely on them tomorrow as well. We'll have nourishment from them tomorrow. Now, on one level, I mean, Rabbi Yehuda knows, as the Gemara is going to continue pointing out, Rabbi Yehuda knew the importance of emptying oneself out and going to the bathroom, so he knows that a person shouldn't be eating indigestible things like that. So one possibility, the Shittim HaKubetza says he may have been saying it kind of as a joke, but Marashah says that no, when a person has food for the next day, then sure, he shouldn't be eating these blusfin. But Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gemara is going to go on to tell over here, was quite poor, so therefore for him, yes, it would actually be better to eat this less digestible food so that it'll stay more in his stomach and he'll be able to get the maximum amount of nourishment out of it. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Yehuda have a Yosef Tamed Rav Tarfin. Rabbi Yehuda was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Tarfin. We find that in a number of places in Shas where Rabbi Yehuda, when he was young, was a Talmud of Rav Tarfin. We find even before Bar Mitzvah, he mentions, for example, in Masechet Megillah that one time when he was a boy below Bar Mitzvah, he read Megillah in Rav Tarfin's shul. And therefore he argues that therefore Kotlin is able to be motzi others, and the Chachamim disagree with him. Anyway, so one time he was sitting in front of Rav Tarfin as a Talmud. Omalei Rav Tarfin,
who makes the bracha?
According to Rav Yehuda, he himself would be able to. It's a Gemara in Megillah where Rav Yehuda maps Rav Kotlin. He holds that he would be able to be motzi the Gdolim. Yeah. Omalei Rav Tarfin. So Rav Tarfin says to Rav Yehuda, Hayoyin ponechat zehuvim. Today your face seems to be exceptionally glowing. Now the real reason the Gemara is going to point out is because of Rabbi Yehuda's Chochmah and Torah. But he didn't want to take credit for that in front of Rabbi Tarfin, especially, he didn't want to take credit for himself, but on top of that, Ben Yoyada points out it's a matter of Chochmah and Torah, then why isn't Rabbi Tarfin's face glowing? So instead he wanted to give a different reason. Omalei, so he uses kind of an excuse. Emesh, Yotzu avodecha l'sadeh. Yesterday, your servants, Rav Tarfin was rich, so your servants went out to the field. They viewed on a trudin. They brought us beets. Va'achalnum v'loy melach, and we ate them without salt. And that was really good for us. That was a really healthful thing to us. And that's why my face is shining. V'machalnum v'melach, if we had been able to eat them with salt, kol shekein shahayu panenu tzehuvim, then our faces would have glowed even more. Now, Marsha points out, Rabbi Yehuda is including everybody else, because again, he doesn't want to take credit for himself of Chochmas Adam, so therefore he pretends as though it's something that applies to many of the Talmudim. Many of us were out in the field, and we ate these beets of Chola, rather than saying that it's something specific to me. So Ben Yoda talks about over here certain Kabbalistic ideas that the beaks represent, the going out to the field represents Avodas HaBirurim, and also he talks about that Rabbi Yehuda has a certain connection over there with the Neshama, with the Shodosh of Kayin, and therefore particularly in the field, and then he goes Barichos about what it means over there that they ate them without salt and how it would have been even better with salt. On the other hand, Omer Aleha, he matrunisa the Rabbi Yehuda. A certain goyish and noble woman says to Rabbi Yehuda, she also sees his face as shining, but she thinks that's for a different reason. Moira v'ravi. You're a teacher of Torah, and you're a Baal Halacha, you're Paskin and Halacha, but you're drunk. She saw his face was glowing, she jumped to conclusion that it's because he's drunk. Marsha points out this expression "moda v'ravi" is actually a play on words. Like this, a rebbe is called "moiri v'ravi." So she instead alters that to "moda v'ravi." You're a teacher of Torah, v'ravi, but you're drunk. Omalah. So he answers, "Oh, heimenusa b'yadeja hi itza." My faith is in the hands of that woman, meaning in other words, like I'm swearing on the face of on the face of Torah, and you can be guaranteed of it. Imna el kiddush of avdalta. You should know, as far as wine, the only wine that I drink is kiddush and avdala. Va'aboy kosi de pischa and the dalad kosis on Pesach. And you want to know? You think that I get drunk from it? You should know. I can't. I have such a hard time drinking wine. V'chegrani tzda'ai mina Pesach va'adatzeres. I have such headaches from it that I have to bind up my temples, my head from Pesach until Shavuos because of the headaches that I get from drinking dalad kosis. Now, Marsha points out, aside from these kosis, Kiddush Havdalah and the Dalad kosis, there is also there's one other kos which is a bracha as well, namely Birkas Hamazon. However, there at least you have the opportunity. Fine, you don't eat bread, therefore you're not chayav in benching, as opposed to all these Kiddush and Havdalah and Dalad kosis. You have there's no alternative. You have to drink them. Now, the Rashba points out from this lahalocha, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, we learn from this, when it comes to the Dalet Kosis, even if a person doesn't like wine, or even if you give him a headache, like Rabbi Yehuda, he still has to drink wine for the Dalet Kosis. He has to force himself to drink it. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah points out, Kiddush and Avdalah is one thing, at least you can be Yotze from somebody else. But Dalet Kosis, every person has to drink for themselves, so therefore that's how it is. There was an interesting discussion in that regard, whether you can be Yotze with grape juice. Now, on the face of it, if Rabbi Yehuda is having such headaches from it, it's more likely because it's wine, because it's alcoholic. So why don't you use grape juice instead? Maybe that shows that you can't use grape juice for the dalad kosis. On the other hand, I've seen it pointed out as a practical matter, they didn't have the ability to have grape juice Pesach time in those days. Nowadays they do because they pasteurize it, but back then grapes would be harvested and pressed around Elul Tishrei time. By the time Pesach comes, either it's spoiled or it's turned into wine. So there's not really much of an alternative to use grape juice. That doesn't show that if grape juice hadn't been available in Rabbi Yehuda's times, he might not have used it. The Maaseh, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should use wine if you can, but if you can't, then you can be Yotze with grape juice. So that's his answer to her. You're claiming that I'm drunk, here I barely drink wine at all, and when I do, it gives me tremendous headaches. Then there was a third person who also came to him and was commenting on his appearance, on his glowing appearance. Chokhmas Adam Torah. So the chokhmah of a person makes his face light up. Does this mean he actually told it to her, or does it mean the Gemara is interjecting that? Does different Mephoshim have different understandings whether that's what he's telling, whether that's part of what he's telling her or not? Then there's a third one. Amalayahu Mina, Rabbi Yehuda. A certain Min says to Rabbi Yehuda, also about the fact that Rabbi Yehuda's face is glowing. He says to him, Ponecha doimin oikim malvi ribis oikim gadle chazirim. Your face is the kind of face of a person either who lends money at ribis or who raises pigs. Both of those kinds of people have they can make a very easy living. Malvi ribis, you're asleep and your money keeps on growing. And then they'll eat anything, so you don't have to really feed them. They can scavenge for their food, and they're getting bigger and bigger. So this Min is telling Rabbi Yehuda, you have such a glowing face, it shows you obviously must be very satisfied with life, so it must be, from here, with his Goyish cup, he thinks that those are the only reasons why a person might be happy and satisfied and his face glowing. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda answers him, Bihudoi tavayu asidinli. Among Jews, both of those are also to me. So either Bihudoi means among Jews, or there's an explanation that Bihudoi means I swear by my Yiddishkeit. Anyway, Tavayu Asirim, both of those things, lending at Ribbis and raising Chazerim, are both also for Jews. Ella, I'll tell you why my face is glowing. Between my house and the Beis Medrash, there are 24 bathrooms. As I'm going throughout the day, when I go back and forth between my house and the Beis Medrash, I stop in every one to see if I need to go to the bathroom. So that way, like, he's keeping very regular, and that has such a good effect on his health that his face is glowing. So now, altogether, you have three different reasons that Rabbi Yehuda has given to three different people why his face is glowing. So Maharal Shah explains that when it comes to the min, the reason is because the min is being chutzpahdik to him and saying that he's a malva beribis or magabo chazedim, therefore he uses, and after all, chazedim live, not live, but they're one of the places where they scavenge is in bathrooms and latrines. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda answers him with something involving bathrooms. Other than that, though, the Rif points out another way of looking at it is, Rabbi Tarfon sees Rabbi Yehuda every day. So Rabbi Yehuda can't very well tell him that it's because it's chokhma that makes his face glow, or because of the 24 bate kisses, because then Rabbi Tarfon would ask, well, why my yom me and mine, and why is today any different than any other day? Therefore, he has to give him the excuse about the beats. And that explains that's something unique for today. Then he points out another possibility. The Rif also adds the beats may have taka made him even looser than normal, so that he's much more able to empty out when he goes to the bathroom, and therefore that made him exceptionally healthy that day. On the other hand, he goes to say to the woman, the Rif goes on to the goyish and noble woman, she doesn't know that Rabbi Yehuda is poor, so she's not going to appreciate the fact that he ate something that day that Punkti usually doesn't have, and that helped him. So she thinks that he must be a Baal Momon, that you must be rich, that you're able to drink. So he tells her that no, the reason is because Chochmas Adam Torah Ponov. She's also not going to accept this idea about the bathrooms. It's not going to be beyond her. Then to the min, he can tell the thing about the bathrooms. He doesn't believe in anything about the chachamim, and he's not going to really accept the thing about the beats either. So therefore, such a small thing should cause that his face glows like that. So therefore, he tells him the thing about the beis hakisei. So there's different other points that Mefarshim should make why he gave a different answer to each one. Ben Yoyada points out he couldn't tell the one about the bathrooms to the noble woman, because maybe that's sneistic to talk about. You're talking to the opposite gender. To talk about bathrooms is not really the right thing to do. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yehuda kad ozo lebei medrasha, when Rabbi Yehuda would walk to the Beis Medrash, shoku gufa al kasbe. He would carry a barrel or a jug or something on his shoulder, and then when he got there, he would use it as a seat. Omar, he would say, work is a tremendous thing that it honors those who do it. Meaning like this, I don't have to sit on the ground. Like this, I have something with me to sit on. Marsha points out, you know, when you get down to it, a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to do malacha in front of the public. But here, where he's carrying a seat for himself, that would be mutter, precisely because Gdor the malacha Shem Chabedes, because it honors him that this way in the Beis Medrash, he doesn't have to sit on the floor. Similarly, Rav Shimon shokot tzana al kasve. Rav Shimon did a similar kind of thing. He carried a basket on his shoulder, and the same thing. He would use it as a seat. The Beis Medrash also omer gdol malacha shemachabedes es ba'aleha, and he says the same thing. Ben Yoyada makes a point, the pnimis in yonim, that we're also talking about, the avodas habirurim that they do, the malacha we're referring to over here is the malacha of transforming the world into a jidim atachtoinim, and therefore that they're very happy, the machabedes as ba'aleha, that they have the opportunity to do this malacha, that it brings a person honor, that brings a person the koichas of kedusha that he liberated from the world. One thing he points out, the word malacha is the same gematria as Kael Adnai, which is brought in Sifrei Kabbalah. Those are the Sfarim, those are the Shemus of Hashem, that power all world of Asiya. That's gematria 96. So that's the combination of Shemus of Hashem that powers all world of Asiya. So therefore, all world is the word for malacha, to be doing the malachas of making the world into a Didah V'Tachtonim, and therefore to be Hordan and Reb Shimon. Even though they're Torosim Umnosim, they're learning full time, they're very happy that they have this opportunity to also do Avodas Abirurim. So the Gemara continues. Here's something else that tells us about how poor Rabbi Yehuda was. Dvesu did Rabbi Yehuda Nafkas. One time Rabbi Yehuda's wife went out, Nikitas Amra, She bought some wool, Abdus Glima de Hutvi, and she made out of it a nice looking coat. Had Nafka Lashuka, from then on, when she would go out to the market, Machasya Le Obey, then she would wear it. V'chad Nafak Rabbi Yehuda L'Saluya, and when Rabbi Yehuda would go to Shul to Daven, have a Machasi or Masli, then he would cover himself with it, because after all, the same way as when you're davening, you're supposed to wear a jacket or a kapota or something like that, so he would use this as his outer garment when he's davening. Obviously, therefore, the point is that it was not something that would be appropriate specifically for men or for women, so therefore there's no issue of lo yilbash in it. So you can see, in other words, it didn't really amount to much. It obviously wasn't much of a coat if it's something that he and his wife could use interchangeably. But the point is also that we see also from this that Rabbi Yehuda was poor, and therefore he and his wife had to share one coat. Nevertheless, v'chad mechasi lei obey, when Rabbi Yehuda would cover himself with it, he would make a special bracha on it. Hamavarach baruch sha'atani me'il. He would make a bracha to Hashem, blessed is Hashem, who gave me a me'il. Now, me'il is a much more important kind of garment. A glima is a simpler kind of garment. A me'il is a fancier kind of garment. We see the Kohen Gadol wore me'il. We see that me'ilim are mentioned in Psukim when it comes to royalty and important things like that, and important people like that. So Rabbi Yehuda appreciated this glimmer, this simple garment, which we're saying was so simple that he and his wife could wear it interchangeably, and they're not even oivran le'yobash yever. Nevertheless, to him it was as important as a me'il, and he would say this special bracha on it. There is, by the way, an interesting thing, an interesting side point with this expression that he says, Baruch Sha'atani Me'il, a little tidbit of Chabad history. So in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, in Simen Ches, in Hilchos Tzitzis, it talks about the question, we know on a talus you make the Baruch HaLisata for Tzitzis, on the talus Godel. What about the talus cotton? So the Mechaber brings an opinion that you should still say Lisata for Tzitzis. You're not wrapping yourself with it. Doesn't matter, a number of Rishonim say that it can still be considered wrapping. On the other hand, that Amar brings, that Yeshayimim, that you should say instead, Al Mitzvah Tzitzis, and that's how we do, that's how it's in the Siddur. So now, so the various Mephoshim and the various Poskim discuss back and forth about the ins and outs of this, what's the deal. Can you consider that a Talis Cotton can be considered Atifa or not? So the Vilna Gaon, Agoris HaGro, and I'm Shulchan Aruch over there, he points to our Gemara over here, Baruch Sha'otani Me'il. So on the face of it, we see, in other words, that otani would have to mean something that covers the whole body, like this me'il or this glimmer is doing. Now the Tzemach Tzedek in his piskei halacha about it, the Tzemach Tzedek addresses this point and he brings various psukim and then he mentions the Vilna Gaon's point and he says on it ve'ena tshuva. That's not really a salt. That's not really a very good refutation to say just because it says here shartani me'il, it means it has to cover the whole body because we find the other psukim where the shodesh ota is used to mean covering part of the body, like v'alsofam yata by a mitzvah where he only has to cover his head. So now, what happened was, if you look in the Tzemach Tzedek's printed, in the Tzemach Tzedek's printed Piskei Dinim, you will find that. But there have existed copies that instead of the words Ve'enat Shuvah have something like Vani Ba'onyu Lezachisi, I couldn't understand, I didn't have the schus to understand him. What happened? Somebody wrote to the Rebbe in the early Tufshin Yuds when they were reprinting the Tzemach Tzedek's Chidushim and then things, and they asked him, what's going on over here? We have these two different versions. The Rebbe explained to him, this is how he heard it from the Friedrich Rebbe. When they first went, the Tzemach Tzedek's Kedushim and Piskei Dinim and everything were not published during his lifetime. They first started publishing them after, many years after his Estalkus, in the Tof Resh Mems, in Tof Resh Mem Dalad was the first of them. So even after the Rebbe Maharashim passed away, which by the way, the fact that we call him the Rebbe the Tzemach Tzedek is named after his Sfarim, that name wasn't used in his lifetime because they first started printing the Sfarim under those names many years after his Estalkus. Anyway. What happened was, where they printed them in Vilna, which at that time was still a very solidly misnagdish city, and on top of it, it was after the Rebbe Maharash's Estalkus, the Rebbe Barashab had not fully accepted the Nesios, so the printers or somebody in the print shop over there decided they have an opportunity to put in a little forgery over there. They say, fill up this words, the Ena Tshuva that the Mechsenet is using on the Rebbe Maharash, on the Vilna Gaon, they consider it to be a disrespectful expression. So they took it out and substituted this other phrasing. then when they found out about it in Lubavitch, then they made a whole to-do about it, and they had the page reprinted, and they tried to replace it in every copy. Naturally, some copies got away with the original printing. The Rebbe explains that's what happened. At the time, when the Rebbe wrote these letters, he says, we don't have the Tzemach Tzedek's original tshuva, we only have a copy of it from a matik, but it says clearly they've ain't a tshuva. Later on, they brought to 770 the actual Saviad Kodesh of the Tzemach Tzedek, and you can very clearly see over there that he says ve'ena tshuva, and that's like the Rebbe says, these madpissim in Vilna or somebody over there in the print shop got involved over there and then altered things. All right. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Zimna choda gozer of Shimon Gamliel tanisa. One time Reb Shimon Gamliel declared a tainis, and everybody needs to come to the Beis Medrash over there to daven together. Reb Yehuda lo osi lebei tanisa. Reb Yehuda didn't come. Omrulay, so they asked him, they asked Rav Shimon Gamliel, why is Rav Yehuda not coming? Loy Islay Kisuya, maybe he doesn't have anything to wear to such a distinguished gathering. So what happened with the coat at that point is where Marshall says at that point his wife was using it at that point, or Rabbi Yehuda was embarrassed to come with it because after all, as much as he's making a brach on it and all, it's still not becoming dick to come in front of the Nasi and everybody else wearing such a dilapidated coat. Shodolei Glima, sort of Shimon Gamliel sent him a garment, the Loi Kabel, but he didn't want to accept it. Dolit Sipsa, he picks up the corner of the mat that he was sitting on, Rabbi Yehuda, Omalei the Shlifa, he says to the Shliach that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had sent, Chozi Mai Ika, look what there is here. It was covered with gold coins. There was a Pashat Anes that he knew, he had the Tochen and the Ebeshter that he's going to pick it up, and immediately there's going to be gold coins over there. El Nihu, however, Le Nichali Yishani, Bahayama, I don't want to have Hana from this world. In other words, yes, I could have at any time that Hashem could give me a tremendous treasure of gold, but I don't want to have Hana from this world anymore than necessary, and therefore that's why I'm going to turn down this gift of a coat from Rav Shimon Gamliel. Ben Yoyada points out that's why he had to show them the coins, because otherwise it would look like he's throwing Rav Shimon Gamliel's present back in his face, so he has to explain, and this way he has to show them that this. We find Rav Shimon also the famous thing, he's Smali Dinei Zahav, with the valley over there to be filled up with gold coins. So yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Hey Shvat. This was a sicha that Rebbe was talking about, we know it says that the people are all going to be healed of all their ailments when Mashiach comes. We'll have the complete refuah of Bnei Yisrael, even the ones who are sagi nohar. This was a sicha that Rebbe was talking about, people who are blind. This was when they first published Tanya in Braille. So then as Chazal tell us, that lost in love, the blind will be healed, and when in fact the Medrash says, when Hashem comes to heal the world, the first ones who are going to be healed are the blind. So it means there's not going to be lacking anything in their physical ability to see, and therefore they'll be able to read and learn Torah. They'll be able to learn Torah using regular printed material, not like now where they need braille material. We were learning halachas about we're starting a new simon in Kitzes Shulchan Aruch, the halachas of Eruv Chatzeres. So start with the basics. You have two or more Jews living in one chotzer or one building, and everyone has their own apartment or room or whatever, so you're not allowed to carry between one apartment and another or in the hallways or in the chotzer or anything, or even, for example, in windows between one of them, unless they make an Erev Chatzeres. So they have to make an Erev Chatzeres taka so they don't come to a michshol. So that's why you have to have an Erev Chatzeres, for example, in an apartment building or duplex or whatever, things like that. The details of how we do that is going to be in the rest of the simon.